Okay. Good morning to everybody. I would hope you missed us last week. I want to say thank you to Ken Eels for speaking last week. That will happen from time to time. I've learned if I tell you in advance, most of you just get stay home, and that's not always a good thing to do. I want to start this morning, and I think this is the right way to start. When you speak of the group of people who came out of Egypt, what language would you use? What word or phrase would you use to identify that group that Moses led out of Egypt? Louder.
Children of Israel.
The children of Israel. You hear that phrase? It's Father's Day. Israel and his children. Who's Israel?
Jacob.
Who's Israel?
Jacob.
Isaac had two sons. Who was the number one son?
Esau.
By how much? A few minutes. By a hand on the foot. Who was the second son? But Jacob's name became
Israel.
And it was right in this time frame. It was right in this time frame where that happens. God has met him on his way back from being with Laban, and God has given him a new name in that wrestling match that somebody wrestled with this whole week, she told me. Esau gets a new name. The Bible is going to train you over the next several chapters that every time you hear Esau, you need to hear at least one other name. Now, what name was already associated with him? We picked this up the last time we were together. What was the name of the country from which he came? Not yet. What was the other name? Pop quiz time.
Seir.
Seir, bravo. S-E-I-R. And what did Seir mean?
Harry and Rush.
Now, what name eventually comes for the country that Esau is now in? Edom. So, back here we have Esau and Jacob. That's where we are now. The Bible is preparing you for most of the rest of the Old Testament, and interestingly, for enough of the New Testament to be fascinating. You've got Edom and Israel. That's part of what's happening through here. Whatever else is happening, you are being trained to watch for this. And there's a phrase that the Bible almost uses, never quite uses, but it's a phrase that you really need to hear because it's going to make sense out of so much that's coming. Brother nations. Brother nations. If you talk about England or America and you listen to Kate Smith, for example, singing God Bless America, how does Kate Smith refer to America? Does it refer to America's possessions as his or hers? Hers. We're used to thinking of countries, if we're going to give them a gender, we usually get, but in the Bible, Israel and Edom are given the masculine terms. They are spoken of as countries that would have his lands, not her lands. And the key to this is brother countries. Now, it's a little bit of a stretch to do it with what we have up here. So I'm going to now take this one step further and simply say Israel a second time. Israel is Jacob's new name. Israel is also the name of the country that emerges from his family. Okay? It's a little cleaner with Esau because it goes Esau to Edom, not Esau to Esau. Right? So, what is Seir? Seir is the name of the country before Esau comes in. And when Esau comes in, he and his family pretty much take over. So you have Seir transitioning into Edom, across this part of the Bible record. Now, if you will stay with me, we are looking at the period in the Bible between Genesis 34 and 37. So we're looking at 34, 35, 36. Those are the chapters we're looking at. As texts go, this is a tough text to be in. Theological high spots are missing. Theological and social low spots are prevalent. But across here, the Bible is laying alongside of the facts of what happened. It's laying alongside of that the teaching of something. And the teaching is, brothers, and brother countries. I remember hearing Jim Flaming one time talk about families. And he says, you often see in a family brothers fighting with each other. But when somebody else comes in and starts picking on one of the brothers rally around. That's usual. That is not what happens here. Now, I just took you through the rest of the Old Testament and into the New Testament with that statement. The beginnings of all of that are back here. And if you don't understand those beginnings, you're not tuned in that every time you see Edom through the rest of the Bible, you got to remember this. This is my brother country. What's he doing to me? The splits that come back here are splits that have ramifications for a very long time. Okay? Now, let's stay with this for a moment. This is Israel, or it could be the children of Israel, right? The children of Israel. Who were these children? Who's the number one son? Pop quiz time. You got this one down?
I wouldn't. If I were in your position, I wouldn't. I'd have to work at it a bit. Somebody's getting there.
Reuben is number one. Reuben is number one. Who's number two? Who's number three? Who's number four? And then we will take a break. Do you know?
Simeon.
Somebody's learning to look. It's all in this section between 34, 35, 36. You have to just look a bit. Simeon. And who's number three?
Levi.
And who's number four?
Judah.
Well, number four is from Leah, the first wife. There may have been another one in there. I think there were other children born in there. But in terms of birth, this is all in Leah's. These are Leah's children. Now, who's number 11 and who's number 12? These are Rachel's. Rachel's children. Who's number 11? Who's number 12? Joseph and Benjamin. Who was Daddy's favorite boy?
Joseph.
Who was Daddy's second favorite boy? Benjamin. Okay. Jesus was born of which family?
Joseph.
Not Joseph's. You might think Joseph's, but it's not Joseph's. Judah. He's born of Judah's family. He's born from that number four child. The lineage doesn't go through son number one, son number two, or son number three. It doesn't go through the fourth son of the first wife. Sorry, it doesn't go through the favorite son. Somehow, in this whole thing, it ends up that the focus of the Bible, as it funnels down to where you see Jesus coming along, the focus ends up on Judah. Now, I propose that there's a question. Why not Reuben? Why not Simeon? Why not Levi? And whatever else is going on in these three chapters, that answer is the big thing that emerges from it. Why not Reuben?
because Reuben stumbled so badly, it's ugly. We don't even want to talk about it. Why not Simeon and Levi? Because they stumble so badly, we hardly want to talk about it. My job is to take you through the Bible, a book at a time, a chapter at a time. That means I'm not allowed to skip chapters I'd like to skip. I'd like to skip chapter 34. It's ugly. It's ugly at the start. It's ugly in the middle. It's ugly at the end. You look up ugly in the dictionary, this chapter might just be set alongside of it. What happens in chapter 34? All these sons, and Jacob has a daughter. What's the daughter's name? Diana. And what does she do? She goes out to visit the women of the country. Now, what's the country?
Let's get a little... We don't have any... Hi, Bill. We didn't get your name up this week. We must have done that on another week, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to use... Is it okay if I use the guest area for the... Okay. So, here's the Sea of Galilee. Here's the Dead Sea. Here is the Jabbok River. What does Jabbok stand for? What's its meaning? Joe?
Prince.
Joe? What's the meaning of Jabbok River? That's what you've been...
It's a...
That's what you've been...
Okay.
Wrestling with. Wrestling. That's the Wrestling River, right? Among its names was the Wrestling River. And on the banks of the Jabbok River, what happened? Joe? That's where Jacob wrestled with God, or with an angel, with a physical manifestation, God in flesh. He wrestled with God in the flesh, with an angel, some emissary or messenger from God, by the banks of the Wrestling River. When he looked up from that wrestling match, when dawn came, what did he see? He saw Esau coming with how many men? 400. And those men were? Armed. He's got an army coming at him. But everything seems to have calmed back down. When he got finished on the banks of the river, Esau says, come with me. Let's all go to
my home. Seir.
Seir. Where's Seir? It's down here.
South.
Seir is down here. And you get your southern accent right, it rhymes if you don't know. Okay? So what does Esau want? Esau wants Jacob to go this way. Which way does Jacob go?
He goes to Israel.
Well, interestingly, not quite yet. He goes up here to a little place called Succoth. And then, a little later, he comes across and goes to a place called Shechem. And after all the things that happened in chapter 34, he finally goes to Bethel, which I think is here. And where's Daddy? Let me put some things on here. I don't think I've got Bethel far enough, but it's somewhere in there. What's beyond Bethel? Okay. The place where Jerusalem will someday be is about there. What is there is Bethlehem. But where's Daddy? Where's Isaac? Because Isaac is still alive. Everybody thought he was going to die way back when. That's why they got the blessing. I'm going to bless my children, and then I'm going to die. And he lives, 43 years longer, I think it was. He was 137. He lives to 180. Okay, where's Daddy? Daddy's at a place called Mamre. But it turns out that gets a new name after the children of Israel take over this area. That's Hebron. That's Hebron. Hebron is down here. So, Esau is here. Isaac is here. And Jacob is wandering around up in there. Esau says, come with me to Seir. Jacob says, I'm going to do that. I am going to do that. But we got all these little lambs here, and if we push the lambs along, all the animals will die. If we push the little lambs on, all the animals will die.
And he said, well, that's fine. I'll just leave some of my soldiers here to make sure you get there. No, no, no. You've got other things for them to do. You go ahead. I'll meet you. Esau goes this way. Jacob goes the other way. Eventually comes across to Shechem. So here he is in Shechem. And the last little bit of chapter 33, this is verse 19. He encamped opposite the town, and for 100 pieces of silver he bought from whom?
From the sons. It's Father's Day. Here's some more sons. From the sons of Hamor. He bought from the sons of Hamor. Okay? Now, mine says the sons of Hamor. Hamor was the father of, and what was the name of the place?
Shechem.
I'm not sure how this all came to be, but there it is. Okay.
He bought from the sons of Hamor, one of whom was Shechem, the namesake of the city.
Is that what yours says? Verse 19, chapter 33? Everybody with me? He bought from them for 100 pieces of silver a piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. There he erected an altar, which he called El, the God of Israel. Verse 1. Diana's the first word in my verse 1. Got the first word in yours?
Now.
Now, Diana. Yours is the second word, third word. Somewhere early on, you ought to see the name Diana. And she goes out to visit the people of the women of the country. Her daughter by Leah, so brother too. Her brothers were Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and then somewhat later Judah, so Judah might have been the youngest one there. Okay? She went out to visit some of the women of that region. Verse 2, Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite. A lot of ites around there. Headman of the region. Now, I need to know how yours words this because there's ambiguity in mine. Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, headman of the region. Who's the head of the region? Is it Hamor or Shechem? Is yours less ambiguous than mine? Okay. He's either Shechem's the chieftain or he's the son of the chieftain.
There's no comma
after. Okay. Mine says Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, comma.
Mine leaves out the comma.
Head man of the region.
Comma. And it's the presence or absence of that comma that creates the ambiguity. Mine, it makes it sound like Shechem's the head man. He's either the chieftain and Hamor is old and weak. Or Hamor is the chieftain, and this is the prized son. He's the one son that gets brought out to a special prominence here, right? Are you reading at least two verses ahead of where I am?
Yes, it sounds like Shechem.
What did I say? I'd just as soon not talk about chapter 34. What happens? Mine gives three stages to his actions. Shechem sees Diana. That's step one. Secondly, my translation says he seized her. He sees her and he seized her. And then he forced her himself on her is the best I can do at diplomacy here.
Violated her.
Dishonored her. He raped her. He raped her. Verse 3. After this, it says three more things happened. Maybe four. Three, I think. Afterwards, mine says he was captivated by her. I need just that verb. That very first one. Drawn to her, your sister. Attached to her. The second one fell in love with the girl. And the third one, mine says, tried to win her heart. Spoke tenderly to her. How'd that go? I don't want to be too blunt here, but how would you think that would go? Not all that well. So, he said to his father Hamor, and this is why I think Hamor was the chieftain, go get me this girl. I want to marry her. Meanwhile, Jacob heard about all this, and what did he do? Answer is, he did nothing. Why did he do nothing? Because his boys were away. He doesn't have an army of 400 men. He's got an army of 11 at this point, and some of them pretty young, and they're out with the flocks. Nobody looks good here. Shechem doesn't look good here. Jacob doesn't look good here. Diana is going out unescorted. I do not want to put blame on her. That is not the way you do that. But there is danger. I have a student with me working over at UVA right now. She lives in an apartment complex not far from a Shell station. In the Shell station is a Subway shop. It's about a mile and a quarter from the building. Or not quite a mile, I guess, from the building. And my collaborator and I, when he's in town, he's in Ireland right now, walk to that Shell station to buy a Subway. We split the Subway and a cup of water, and that's our lunch. And we get a little exercise on the way. Okay, we have a back way to go that takes us through some woods, down some little gravel paths and all that, in between houses and school play yards and all this kind of stuff. And it comes right out into the apartment complex where she lives, and right down the foot of the hill is the Shell station. So I told her, here's this back way you can go. Guess what? She doesn't walk that way. Why not? There's no people there. It is an ugly thing, but it's not safe. I do not want to put blame on Diana. That is not right. But she was in a dangerous place and seemed not to have realized it. So here we go. Verse 6, Hamor, father of Shechem, was visiting Jacob to discuss the matter with him when Jacob's sons returned. What do you discuss the matter? What's missing here? There's something grossly, grotesquely missing here. What's missing? There's no apology. There's no shame. He's just discussing the matter. And what does he say? Verse 8. My son Shechem's heart is set on your daughter. Please allow her to marry him. And he goes on to say other things down this line. Now, in the meantime, the brothers have come back. The sons of Israel have come back. What's their reaction? There's at least two verbs in mine. Grief. Mine is outrage and infuriated. So yours has grief and infuriated. Okay. Very different verbs, grief and outrage. Shocked, yours says, which is a neutral word in between those. Okay? So, one daddy is with the other daddy. The sons return. Shechem is probably standing on the sidelines watching all this. Diana probably is listening from behind a door. Here come the boys. What's the daddy's argument? My son loves your daughter, and there are financial benefits that could come for everybody if we just start a process of blending our two families together. And I'll pay any price you want. Dowries and bride prices. I'll pay any bride price you want. Just name it. And it seems like he was speaking to both the fathers and the sons. And if you look, verse 11, Shechem enters into this, and Shechem's the one that actually talks about the bride price. Everybody okay? Mm-hmm. You got this picture? Verse 13, my translation uses the word crafty in the middle of this verse. Jacob seems still to be silent. Have you noticed the absence of Jacob's voice so far? Hamor's talking. Shechem's talking. Now the brothers start to talk. Jacob is silent. Jacob's son gave Shechem and his father Hamor a crafty answer, speaking as they did because he had dishonored their sister Diana. And he then begins to use religion as a tool for revenge. How ugly is this chapter? About as ugly as it gets. Without lingering too long, what's about to happen? Okay. But we can't let her marry you as you are right now. You're uncircumcised. So you need to be circumcised. And in fact, everybody in this place needs to be circumcised. Every male in this place needs to be circumcised. And they all said, great, let's do it. And they did it. And while they were in pain, the Bible says in my translation, the boys descended on them and slaughtered every male in the place. Shechem, Hamor, and every other male in the place is dead. And the other boys come in and they take the plunder. The women, the children, all the possessions. They take everything. And up to there, verse 29, you don't know who the ringleaders were. You don't know who the ringleaders were until you get to verse 30 and 31. Who were the ringleaders? Simeon and Levi. What's the bigger message? The bigger message out of these three chapters. Simeon and Levi have just fallen off the wagon as far as being considered as a person through whom God can work. Jacob finally speaks. He doesn't speak until verse 30. He said to Simeon and Levi, he did not seem to say to all the brothers, just to these two, "You have done me an ill turn." That is a poor word to express what has happened. An ill turn? What does yours say? Yeah, you have done an ill turn by bringing me into bad odor with the people of the region. So I need you to look a little closer. Can you find something that parallels an ill turn?
Trouble.
You brought trouble on me. Okay, Billy.
In verse 25, it says here that, well, I guess the main reason he gave those two such a hard time was because Simon and Levi, the two brothers that killed everybody.
Just those two.
Right.
But all the other sons, verse 27,
right,
when they came in on it, off they went. Yeah. So here's Simeon and Levi who had precipitated all of this, and then the other brothers, instead of being outraged, they came in and just added to it. But Simeon and Levi were the leaders. Thank you. "You have made me stink among the people of the region, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. I have few men, whereas they will unite against me to defeat me and destroy me and their and my family." Notice he doesn't say our family. Isn't that interesting? There's a singular there, not a plural, and I think that's right. He doesn't include them. He includes only himself. There's a selfishness to the way Jacob speaks. It's subtle, but it's there. "They retorted, 'Should our sister be treated like a whore?'" And yours probably uses a softer word than my translation. Now, way back when, when Jacob was with Laban, God came to him and said, "It's time to go." And the way he said it was, and this is an interesting phrase, "I am the God of Bethel." He may have said something more like, "I am the God you met at Bethel." But the translation that I have renders it as, "I am the God of Bethel." I think you could hear that as, "I'm the God you met at Bethel." When he says it's time to leave Laban in that second meeting, in that meeting, God doesn't tell him where to go, or at least it's not recorded. But by saying, "I am the God of Bethel," it's an implication Bethel's where he ought to be. Where had he gone so far?
He had gone to Succoth and to Shechem. So now finally,
he gets another word from God. Chapter 35, verse 1. God said to Jacob, "Move on, go to Bethel and settle there. Make an altar there for the God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from with your brother Esau." Things get slightly better at this point. You could picture Jacob in chapter 34, verse 30, as being absolutely indecisive. "You had made me a stench in the nostrils of all the people around. They're all going to gang up and kill us all. They're going to kill my family, not our family." Interesting difference. Where does he go? What does he do? He can't go back towards Laban. Laban set that boundary. You remember, cross that boundary, I treat you as an enemy. Where can he go? And in that indecision, God appears to him and says, "Go to Bethel. Go to Bethel." Verse 2 is interesting. For the first time, Jacob seems to recognize something has been wrong a very long time. What does he order his family to do? The servants and all those. "Get rid of your foreign gods. We must move and go to Bethel. There I'll make an altar for the God who heard me when I was in distress and gave me his help on the journey I made." What a great sentence. "There I will make an altar for the God who heard me when I was in distress and gave me his help on the journey I made." They gave Jacob all the foreign gods in their possession, and they gave him one more thing. This is not what he asked for. He asked for all the foreign gods, all the idols, we presume. What do they give him? They give him all the idols, all the foreign gods, and they give him one more thing. What do they give him? I don't know what that means. Somehow that must have been associated with worship as well and was implied by his statement because they included those.
The note in Bill's Bible says that it was a pagan religious custom.
It sounds like it
charms.
Must have been amulets or something like that.
And they refer to Hosea 2.
Okay. So what did Jacob do with them when he got them? He did not crush them to powder. He did not smash them to bits. He did not grind them. What did he do? Buried them where? Be very careful. I want to hear every word. Buried them where? Is there, under the oak. How many oak trees were around here? How many oak trees were around here? Sounds like not many. Few enough that if you said the oak tree, everybody would know what you're talking about. Okay. I think there's something symbolic here. It was good to get rid of the idols, but he's left them in a place where he can find them if he needs them. I don't think Jacob comes out of this shining. Okay, there's still a little tarnish on there. They broke camp. A divine terror struck the towns round about, and no one pursued the sons of Jacob. And off they go, and where do they end up? Luz. L-U-Z. Not Lux. Not Luz. And what's Luz?
Bethel.
So end up at Bethel. What does he do at Bethel? He built an altar there. Named the place El Bethel, since it was there that God had appeared to him when he was fleeing from his brother. And somebody died. Who died? Deborah. Who's Deborah? Comes out of nowhere. Here's the sentence falling in the middle of all this. Who's she?
Nurse.
Rebecca's nurse. Who's Rebecca? Who's Rebecca? Oh, be careful. Rachel was the wife. That's Mama. Mama's nurse. Where'd she come from?
From when she was with Laban. She came with her. She married
her. That's Rachel.
Rachel, excuse me.
You got to go back to Rebecca. Where did that? We don't know. Let's speculate a little bit. What do we know about Esau? What does the name Seer mean? Rough and hairy, outdoorsman. Okay, the mighty warrior. Hunt, hunt, hunt. Kill, kill, kill. Right? Filet, filet, filet. What do we know about Jacob? Mama's boy. So when mama dies, what happens to the nurse? The one who had been with the mama all the time. Apparently somehow ended up with Jacob. We don't know how. Maybe she brought him word that Rebekah had died. I don't remember that he was present when Rebekah died and was buried.
Oh, that's just been dead.
Because Rebekah's been gone a while now, I think. Or at least there's no mention of her. So here's the nurse. And where did they bury her? Don't miss this, guys. They're in Bethel now. Where do they bury her? Are you all sensitized to this now? Are you sensitized to that little V? How many oak trees are in Bethel? Not many. Few enough that if you say the oak tree, they know which one you mean. Doesn't? Mine says the, and not only that, he then names the tree. What's the name of the tree? The Oak of Tears. Yeah, the weeping oak, instead of a weeping cherry or a weeping willow. God appears again. And in the verses that follow, down through verse 12, I think it is, God affirms the covenant, affirms the blessing, and affirms the name change. Affirms the covenant, both descendants and land. Renews the blessing. All that that comes. What is it with oak trees in the promised land? I think we should keep an eye on that. I'm not ready to do anything with that. Yes, ma'am?
I want to go back to burying the idols, can I?
Please, as opposed to grinding.
Well, instead of pulverizing them, I know in Thailand when Thais would become Christians, they had altars in their homes where they had these things.
I've seen things like that.
Yeah, they would put the statues in their home. And when they became Christians, I hardly remember one who had the courage to get rid of that themselves. They knew it needed to be gotten rid of, but they couldn't do it themselves. And so they would ask us, who I guess we were supposed to be impervious to the effects of it, to come get it and take it out. And they had a place under a tree where it was okay to discard usually old spirit houses or idols and things. They didn't bury it. They did put it under that tree. But they were still fearful of what the spirits that they believed loved in these things would do to them if they dishonored them by taking them out of their house. So I'm wondering.
I was wondering as you spoke to the word dishonor and disrespect.
There's not more to burying
I think there's a whole lot
under the tree than coming back and getting them later. I think it speaks to perhaps the fact that Jacob didn't. There was more belief in those idols among not just his people, but maybe him, about what would happen to him if he destroyed those idols. It's speculation, but I'm just telling you from my experience. They would not destroy them.
Yeah, I'll get you in just a second. I don't think this lines up well with that. But there were memories invested in those things. There were times where they saw significance in these things.
And well, and if you remember was it Rebecca when she left her, Rachel, when she left her father's house, brought her idols with her?
Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking about my pack rat tendencies and the efforts that someone I love and cherish often invokes to try to get me to get rid of some of the things. And sometimes I can bury them in a box somewhere. I think there may be some parallel there as well, but I don't want to push that. Yes, ma'am.
Along that same thought, God is calling it the idols are new, but he's also calling for them to purify and change their covenant. Is that there something added into that husband that could help us now?
I think the biggest thing is he got rid of them. The method of getting rid of them, I think, is interesting, but I don't think that's the big story. The big story is, as they have allegiance to God, they still have this side allegiance to these, my translation calls them foreign gods, idols representing something, spirit houses, I think you used for the culture in which you were. And that sort of dual allegiance, Jacob is ending the visible symbols of that. I don't know that ending that relationship is that easy, but at least leaving all that behind was doable.
Yeah, because he's asking for three things. That's to me significant.
Yeah.
In my impression here.
Okay. But something in here, this is a significant moment, and I think the biggest thing is he is ending the physical presence of these talismans, these amulets, these charms that represent a secondary allegiance, making God his only allegiance. And I think that's as far as I can go. It's very interesting to me, the burial. And I think probably to say that was having respect for whatever those things might mean to other people and what they had meant to them. That's probably at least a big part of that. And I don't know that I've stated well what you were saying. No, I didn't. Okay. We ready to go on? We got about 6 minutes, and I think there's almost enough time to do what we have left to do. Almost. God finished speaking to him, and verse 13 is strange. I don't understand verse 13. My translation renders it as, then God went up from him. And I don't know what that means. Joe, there's one you can work on for the next couple of weeks. What was Jacob's response? He's already built an altar. What is his response? Verse 14. Mine says in verse 7, he built an altar in Bethel. He is still in Bethel. Verse 14, what does he do? My verb is different and my noun is different. Set up a pillar. He built an altar. Mine says he raised, R-A-I-S-E-D, a monument. And the monument appears to be standing stones, mine says in a few words from that. At the spot where he had spoken to him, a standing stone on which he made a libation and poured oil. He named the place Bethel, where God had spoken to him.
What's the significance of the word Bethel?
It's house of God. Remember, when he was there before, he said, God was in this place and I never knew it. This must be the house of God. And so that was on his way to Laban 20 years or so before. Now he's coming back and God is speaking to him again at the same place. So he is affirming that name.
Bill, when we were in Israel, we noticed there were places where they had stones piled. To commemorate something that happened. I don't know what things, but evidently some Israelites still do that.
Oh, that imagery is powerful. Mm-hmm. That imagery is very powerful. I think he's upstairs. He's upstairs teaching, isn't he? You all use that. Somebody used that. It was you guys who used that.
Right.
We went to a wedding a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I think we may have told you about they raised an Ebenezer. If you go into the later part of the Old Testament, Samuel says, here I'm raising an Ebenezer. We have a hymn that speaks to this. Because God has helped us this far. And they marked it with standing. So that kind of monument, I think, is a pretty good word for that. I think that communicates with us. A pillar and a set of standing stones is a description of what it looked like. A monument would be the description of its function, as I would see it. So, yes, that was sort of common. Do you know what standing stones are used for out in the woods? To mark trails. If you're going along with a trail and you see this little pile of stones, the stone says, okay, you're still on the trail. And typically when trails are first built and first opened before they get worn down, you always put the next pile of stones within sight of the first pile of stones. Okay? So what happens if you go along through the woods, you see a pile of stones, you knock it all down? That's a very bad thing to do. And people who hike in the woods a lot get mad at you if you do that. People who tear down standing stones like this, they get even madder. Verse 16, we got two or three things left. Two or three things left. They left Bethel, and while they were still some distance from, mine says Ephrath. Does yours have any other name? Okay. That's the former name, I think. That's the former name for Bethlehem. They're on their way. They haven't reached Bethlehem yet, but they're on their way. What happened? Rachel, we didn't know she was expecting until this moment. She went into labor, and as she had her child, she names him. What does she name him?
Benjamin.
No, she does not. What does she name him? Benoni. And what does that mean?
Son of my sorrow.
Son of my sorrow. Why? Because by the time he's finished being born, she's dead. Jacob renames him. What does he name him? Benjamin, which means son of my right hand. All this happened on the road to Bethlehem or in Bethlehem. And all of a sudden, what does he do? He raises another monument. This is verse 20. Where's this monument? They call that monument Rachel's tomb. I don't remember if we saw that. I don't remember if we saw that, but it was on the road to Bethlehem or in Bethlehem. Maybe they made it that far before they buried her. But it says in verse 29, she was buried on the road to Ephrath. Okay? Verse 21 and 22, this is real short. This is real short, and it is real ugly. Verse 21 is okay. Israel left and pitched his tent beyond Migdal and Middal El Eder. Migdal-Eder is the way mine writes that. Do you notice how the Bible is going back and forth between calling Jacob Jacob and calling him Israel? You notice how many times he's going back and forth? Next verse. One verse. That's all you get. What happens?
I've just drawn a line through Reuben.
Reuben has just taken himself out. What has he done? He slept with one of the slave wives, the mother of his brothers. Verse 23 through 26, he lists the sons of Jacob, lists them not in birth order, but lists them in order of the wives. Leah first, then Rachel, then Rachel's slave girl, then Leah's slave girl. Interesting order. Those were the sons born to Jacob in Paddan Aram. In verse 27, where does he go? He comes home to Isaac at Mamre, which is also called Hebron. I don't know which word will be used in yours. And while he was there, Isaac dies at the age of 180. Who buries him?
The two sons.
Esau comes home long enough for this. Chapter 36 is what's left before we get to chapter 37. Chapter 37 starts the story of Joseph, and that's what we're trying to get to. We have a little bit more to do, and that's chapter 37. It won't take the whole of next week, but it will take some of next week. This is packed full of names. It's tough work to get through here. I invite you to do that. See if you can find the things that stand out for you. You're going to have to remember this whole picture that I put on the front. Esau and Jacob were brothers. Edom and Israel were the countries that come out of that. Seir was the former country. You're going to need all of that information. You're going to need all of that information, especially this over here, to make sense of what you're going to read. Okay? Here is what I want you to see to finally close this all off. There is a long chapter about Esau, and chapter 37 starts, in my translation, with the word but. But Jacob settled in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. There is a contrast between Esau for a whole chapter and Jacob for one verse. And then it starts talking about Joseph. Okay? I'm not sure how much I can say you should be inspired by what we did this morning. But I think you can see a couple of things. One is, the Bible does not present the patriarchs as perfect. They don't just have warts. They've got pretty bad warts. God is faithful, and we are getting a glimpse of why it was that God ended up working through Judah. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for your presence with us. I thank you for your word. I thank you for helping us through a complicated section of Scripture. I pray that you would bring to each of our minds the things that we should remember from here. Most of all, we should remember your faithfulness, your watch care over Jacob, even when he is not and his family is not doing things at all the way you would want people to do. We pray that you would treat us that way, that you would stay faithful in your love to us even when we stumble, and show us the way back into your grace, the way back into your favor, the way back into your will. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.